Mama, I'm Gosia's Carrot, and this is the Firestarter Mom podcast, the show where we feature inspiring conversations with Firestarter moms and experts on motherhood identity shift, finding our inner fire back, and feeling adequate and empowered as moms and women. Welcome! Is your inner fire burning steadily? Or maybe it feels barely lit under the chaos and demands of motherhood? How societal norms, lack of community, and our own expectations impact the flame within? What can we do to ignite and nurture it, to illuminate our journey of motherhood? If you are curious to find answers to that, this episode is for you. Today I speak with Beth Berry, a coach, teacher, mother of four daughters, and author of the book Motherwhelmed. A revolutionary at heart, she helps mothers get more of what they want and need to feel fulfilled and empowered despite the odds. She believes that self-aware, self-compassionate, well-supported mothers who know themselves to be worthy of pleasure and joy-filled lives are powerful beyond measure and essential to the healing of the world. This conversation was introspective, inspiring, and illuminating. Hope it helps you honor and embrace your inner fire so you can bring it to the world and shine. Enjoy. Hello, Beth. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm really glad that I have you as my guest, because I was reading your book, Motherwhelmed, and I see your revolution from home movement, and all you talk about really deeply resonate with me. And I always, when it comes to my guests, I always dive into the transition in motherhood and how that journey really started for them. So I would love to start just there. And can you tell us a bit about who you were before becoming a mom?
So I became a mother at 17. Yeah. So who I was before that was rebellious and very much seeking something meaningful in my life. I was raised in a very conservative home and started pushing out of that dogma and way of looking at the world pretty young. It was too small. The container was too small. And so I was, you know, by the time I was 13, 14, I was pushing pretty hard against a lot of the things that were taught to me as truth, like truth with a capital T, the truth. And I was like, wait a minute, it didn't make sense to me. Yeah. And so I kind of set off on a journey from my immature self, you know, my young, very young self, to find myself, and to figure out who my people were. And I first had to go through a lot of versions of myself that were very extreme. You know, I was looking in extreme places. And so I would say that version of me was very much idealistic, very creative, passionate, and rebellious. Like, this isn't my way. I need to find my way. And I was pretty fierce about it. So that's how I ended up, you know, pregnant by 16.
Do you feel that people around you, the closest ones, which we very often think that they know us best, right? Do you think they saw in you what you saw in yourself when it comes to that change maker spirit, really creating life on your terms or thinking your way, finding your truth? Would you say they thought about you the same way?
Well, my parents, in some ways, yes, but they were really uncomfortable and still are, I think, uncomfortable with me being outside of the way that they see the world and their worldview, their spiritual traditions and beliefs.
Yeah.
And so it has been hard, I think, to feel seen anytime I'm with outside those bounds.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I would say in some ways they have seen me and saw me back then, and certainly honored things like my creativity. I had, you know, my bedroom when I was in high school was full of plants, so many plants, and like a hundred plants or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They definitely encouraged all of those things. And so much of my upbringing fostered those interests because, you know, I have a mother who's an organic gardener and a dad who's a carpenter, and they very much I lived a very wholesome life growing up. So those things stuck, and they celebrated those parts of me and saw those parts of me. Other parts of me, not so much, I would say. So in part.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, when I reflect, I would agree with you. To some extent, they see us for who we believe we are, our, let's say, parents or family, but there are many things that they don't necessarily have to agree with. And but as kids of our parents, yeah, we then obviously evolve and find our way anyway. But what is very unique, you became mom so early, right? Age 17. How do you reflect on your identity then versus how this was maybe shaped or understood better by you when you actually became a mom?
Yeah, I would say that so much of my sense of self, my identity, was developed through motherhood, and through understanding myself through that investment in my, you know, starting with my firstborn. I was a very natural mother, like it came naturally to me, a very instinctive mother, and very passionate. And so I
Right.
really put my whole heart into it. It was also the time of my life where I opened my heart, you know, and took my guards down, because, you know, motherhood will do that. You fall in love so completely. You know, I fell so in love with my daughter. So it really softened me. And I think I had been pretty guarded before that, and sort of vulnerability avoidant. And that really showed me the beauty of softness and nurturing. And so a lot of my identity was certainly shaped through motherhood. And then as I eventually got married and then had three more kids, and motherhood was the primary vehicle for my change making spirit, because I loved it so much, and I felt that it was so purposeful. It felt so meaningful to me. And it was so obvious to me that raising the next generation was, an important task, and one that would, you know, that you could make a big difference in the world by ha depending on how you raised your children.
Yeah,
And so
absolutely.
I really poured a lot into that time of my life.
You know, I have one child, and I always wondered what it means to mom of four or mom who's got more than one to go through that change of becoming mom again in a way, but specifically to the identity shift in this process. I wonder if you. How do you kind of see it? Yeah, when it comes to what kind of shifts happened to you internally with each child? Has there been a process in it? Differences, maybe?
Yeah. I would say that with each child, I felt more and more committed to creating a life and a home for them that they were worthy of, you know, that I felt so devoted to creating a rich and wholesome life. And I felt more and more overwhelmed.
Right.
So as I had more kids, I necessarily relaxed some of my values and my idealism, because I started reaching my capacity.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like failure back then because I was so young and I didn't know. There's a whole lot that I wasn't aware of in terms of what I was navigating, but
Yeah.
I was still trying to hold these really high standards without a lot of support, and it kind of led to burnout. But I would say that I became more and more passionate, but less and less able to fulfill all of these desires that I had, as I was spread thin.
Yeah, you talk beautifully in your book and in depth about not only challenges, but of course, the source of like overwhelm and all those difficult emotions we are going through. And specifically, what caught my heart in a way is when you refer to that powerful force within us that make us feel alive. You call it a soul fire. And I think, yeah, what soul fire, that inner fire in us often is damped, like you say, or dimmed by quite a few things. One of those things will be the expectations from society that we feel we don't measure up to. The actual no amount of organization, like you say, also in your book, no amount of planning, doing, and just being everything actually seem to be enough. Like you are never above the surface anyway. So all of that. But can you tell us a bit more about what inner fire, what soul fire actually means to you?
Yeah. So soul fire to me is sort of the life force energy. And sometimes throughout our lives, it might feel bright and burning brightly. And sometimes it may feel dim. Sometimes it may even feel like it's gone out entirely.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of factors that influence whether or not our soul fire is burning brightly, and whether we feel that vibrancy from within, whether we feel that authentic expression. And so this analogy has really, this metaphor has really helped me through the years to be able to, you know, what, how, if I'm navigating something, some external circumstances, how is this impacting my soul fire? And what does that look like? And so I'll sit with that image and actually have a visual come to mind.
Yeah, see, to me, because the podcast is really Firestarter Mom, Find Your Inner Fire and Shine, really initially inspired by the kind of feeling that I somehow lost that sense of aliveness since becoming mom. I mean, things completely changed for me, and I feel that I am change maker at heart. So for me, that inner fire has been always kind of linked to more like passion, creating change, making difference. But when I read your book, I noticed that you go so much deeper in this. You really break it down into different way it can be manifested. So I wonder if you can share how that inner fire can be manifested in our lives.
Yeah, so I often will see that some of the ways that, like you said, sometimes it is that feeling of aliveness or that excitement or enthusiasm. I think sometimes it's also like creative expression. I think it can also be evidence of soul fire. It can also be anger and rage, you know, that it just lights a fire in us, that there's this really strong feeling of maybe injustice, or someone's crossed your boundaries and you can feel the fire within. And that if we can see it that way, it's really kind of the emotional center of us, the energetic center of us. And if we can feel it and hold that as a sacred thing, and what is my soul fire doing right now? So if I'm feeling rage, is my fire burning really brightly? Does it feel like someone just poured gasoline on the fire? There's not one right way to play with this imagery, but I find that it can be really helpful. And just as helpful, I think, is to consider all the factors that influence our soul fire, and actually come up with those images as well. Like, are you living a life where it feels like, you know, you have a steady rain on your fire all the time? So it's just actually quite difficult to keep it going. What is that steady rain for you? Are we, and this is so true for so many mothers, are we only feeding kindling to our fire? Like, we, you know, so many people now talk about this idea of self-care, but often the self-care that we're, you know, allowing ourselves is like putting kindling on the fire. It's like a 30 minutes of something, and then it goes out again, because we don't really haven't identified what those logs are for us. And systemically, it's sort of set up, the systems and structures are not set up for a brightly burning fire. You know, so many people don't have the communities they would need, the support structures they need in order to keep that fire burning easily, and for other people to also be tending our fire. And so but we end up throwing this kindling at the fire, thinking, okay, well, maybe a little more kindling and I'll feel better. Or why don't I feel better? Why did I just got 2 hours away on a Saturday morning and I still don't feel good? Well, it's because it's not a slow burning log on your fire, you know, and we need to figure out what those are. So sometimes we may also have in our lives what I like to call coal thieves, people who don't know how to tend their own fire. They're not committed to that. And so they come and they try to take yours, you know, of people who are kind of really energetically draining, and they count on your overfunctioning or overgiving or over listening in order for them to feel okay. And I would consider those coal thieves. So we've got to start identifying those people in our lives, protecting. So to be a good soul fire steward is to both know how to tend our fire and also know how to protect our fire.
Oh yeah, I absolutely love it. Coal thieves, yeah, to identify what takes that fire away from us. But actually also the thought about inner fire, is it possible that this fire, if it comes from the source of anger and the kind of, let's say, shadow emotion, that it can burn us out? Yeah, because we want fire that when it's tending, then it actually makes us feel glowing and shining, right? But it could go other way, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think that's what makes this metaphor so powerful, is that we can all see easily how fire can be used for good or destructively. And so what is it to have to feel the rage within around structural oppression, or, you know, any number of things, and learn healthy ways to tend to it, not to repress it, not to try to make it go away or minimize it, but to learn ways to work with it, you know, somatic work, or for me, it's dancing, singing. You know, I'll sometimes, if I'm really feeling a lot of big energy like that, I'll get in my car and just go for a long ride and like scream, sing. I'll turn on music, just loud, like move energy through. And there's a lot of different things we can do, but that helps me feel like I can hold the fire. And then that's a part of the tending to it, is the allowing for those bigger, less comfortable emotions. We're tending to those emotions as well, rather than either letting them burn out of control and then come out of us in destructive ways, or repressing them and tamping them down because we're afraid of them.
Yes, absolutely. But something makes me feel that there is a step and or something happening before we can step into that space of tending to it. Why it may be difficult for mothers to tend to their fire?
Yeah, so many things. One thing is that so many of us don't have a lot of support, or we don't have many breaks from kids. And so there's just not a lot of spaciousness for even introspection and turning within and examining and feeling our feelings. We're just in this rushed pace. So many of us are living this sort of like robots. Like we've got our to-do list. We're trying to, I think of like so much modern motherhood is sort of mechanized. Like they're trying to like make us into machines and be as efficient as possible as producers and consumers, and raising the next generation of producers and consumers.
Oh, gosh,
and it doesn't leave any space for the cultivation of a rich inner life and a well-tended soul fire. So spaciousness, time, you know, that we've been sold the story that one of the ways we prove our adequacy or our worthiness is by constantly staying busy and proving that we are, you know, whatever, dedicated or hardworking. And so many people, even when they have some downtime, don't know what to do with it, or they're uncomfortable in it. They feel like anxious with it, so they try to fill it with something else. But the more we're trying to pack our lives full, like you could think about this with the metaphor as well. Packing wood, you know, in a fire to try to build a fire, it's harder to get it to burn. You actually have to pull logs apart. They need space. They need air. You have to breathe air in them, into the fire, in order to get it to go. And so what does it look like to breathe more air in, to separate the logs, to give some spaciousness in this fire? And then then you can start looking at like systemic oppression of all different kinds, and how it's actually, I like to think of that as like this fuel sort, there's a fuel shortage. You know, it's not actually that easy to find logs. It's not, you know, some people, if you have more privilege, you probably have access to more logs, you know?
Yeah, but also the quality of those logs, let's say family members, or on the outside, we may think, well, yeah, if you have support, so-called village, then you are maybe more likely to find joy in motherhood. Because I think that initially I started to reflect on this, because I don't have any family or support network here in England. And so the weight of parenting and juggling all that is just spread between me and my partner. So it's quite a lot. And I was at one point reflecting, has this impact in some way my level of joy in motherhood. Would that be easy if I had that village? But I just came back from Poland, like I said, and actually those locks, whatever it is, let's say for now we talk about like family members. I think if there is the quality of it, if they definitely are actually bringing the fuel rather than actually taking more of your fire out, is then it's easier, definitely. But I struggle to have one specific answer to this. I think for all of us, it's more about assessing, okay, what my log can be. Yeah. And like, if a listener is just thinking of this, what kind of questions they can ask themselves to identify what that log could be?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I just want to go back to your earlier point that yes, it is so essential that we recognize that yes, in if we had the ideal quote unquote village or a community or family, then that probably would bring a lot of these logs. But the truth is that a lot of us also have these coal thieves in our family system. You know, we also have people who are like threatened by the fact that if we're tending to our soul fire, there are lots of people who might say, who do you think you are to get to tend to your soul fire? You know, not that they're saying these words, but who do you think you are that you're taking care of yourself? I didn't get to do that when I was a mother, you know, had young kids or whatever it is. There's all kinds of different ways that family is not necessarily representing a log for our soul fire. So in terms of identifying questions we can ask ourselves to identify what these logs are, I would say one is to think back to a time in your life much, much earlier, even like say around age 10 or something like that. What did you love then? What did you feel passionate about then? What lit you up? What got you excited? What would your 10-year-old self be disappointed about that you're not doing with your life now? Or what would your 16-year-old self be disappointed about? What would your passionate, idealistic 20-year-old self be sad to know that you are not doing with your life? And, you know, when I asked myself that question some years ago, that's when my inner 10-year-old was like, you're hardly ever singing. How are you not singing? How did that happen? Like, because I sing, you sing all the time. Wow. And so when I discovered how important that was to me, I joined a local community song circle and a choir, and that it really is a consistent log on my fire because it really just lights me up so much. Same thing with dancing. Another log I think that we often could overlook that I think is so essential and is probably maybe the single biggest log on my fire is a sense of emotional safety with our partners. You know, I was in a partnership for so long that in which I didn't have that sense of emotional safety for a lot of different reasons. And that was really challenging.
Can I quickly ask you, emotional safety, what do you mean exactly by this?
So I'm referring to a feeling of calm and ease and a sort of a baseline of this person puts me at rest. I feel at rest around this person. I can be my authentic self. I don't have to constantly be sort of in a fight or flight response with them. You know, they see me. I feel seen by them. I feel heard by them. I feel honored by them. I feel like I can trust them. You know, this is sort of this baseline of a healthy relationship, I believe, is emotional safety.
Yes.
And if we don't have that, you know, if we do have that, it's likely a log on our fire. It really gives us a lot because then we feel safer in the world, more secure in being ourselves, you know. But people who don't have that, often they may even be in a relationship with a coal thief, you know, or somebody who is constantly, you know, raining on their soul fire. People who don't respect boundaries, people who bulldoze boundaries, in fact, who are threatened by boundaries, I would say that all compromises that soul fire greatly.
This is so true. I mean, especially when you are parents together, yes, with your partner or husband, and you come back home or you will spend time with them so often, and it's so important actually that, yeah, like you said, that they honor you, because it could be that you have a partner that has got very strong opinion about, I don't know, even housework or things like that. And it may be difficult to just put your point across with them or to be understood. And often we hear that, yeah, it definitely requires some challenging conversations, not necessarily comfortable for us as mothers, to find that sweet spot, to find that balance. And but there is a skill involved, because I know you also help couples skill in how to communicate, because we often just like forget actually that communication is not necessarily about what you say, but actually what response you get. Can you tell us also a little bit about, yeah, how you help as a change maker? Because, yeah, who you help mainly, and yeah, in what ways?
So I work mostly with mothers, and mothers who are fed up with the status quo, fed up with the way they can look around and say, this, something's not adding up. Something's not quite right. Why is this so hard? Why am I working so hard and I'm still not feeling like I'm doing enough? And I still feel burned out most of the time, who recognize inequities in household labor, recognize systemic problems, or are just even who are just starting to wake up to the fact that, I don't know, something's not quite right here. And this is, it's often also people I work with who really feel how just how essential motherhood is to the wellness of any society, and who recognize, nobody, I'm not being, my, this position is not being honored. Like a once a year Mother's Day card or bouquet of flowers is not making up for all of how disrespected, how invisible my work feels, you know, how a lack of general honoring and around mothers, people who are starting to see this and are looking to unpack it, deconstruct it, and connect with other women who are also fed up and really wanting something better, and wanting something better for our kids, for our partnerships, and for ourselves, who are also on a journey of starting to wake up to the fact that we are worthy of something better. We're worthy of more support, more vibrancy, more of a more structures that help promote the soul fire burning brightly, instead of constantly us trying to work against all these systems. So that's primarily who I work with. And I'm just now starting to also bring in fathers and work with couples in helping to address a lot of the, you know, because what's happening is that in this work for nearly about a decade now with mothers, so often these women are waking up, they're seeing things more and more clearly, and their partners are not necessarily doing that work. And it starts to create a bigger and bigger divide. And I think it creates a lot of stress. It can create a lot of stress in relationships. And some of these men, or they may not be men, but it's mostly men that I'm finding that this issue arises with, are, some of them are capable and of the growth and willing to grow and to evolve their thinking and to change some of their behaviors. And others are not. But I think it's super essential that we start recognizing before we pour decades of our lives into these relationships, is this a person who's willing to grow with me? Is this a person who can see the structural inequities and these structural oppressors and wants to be a part of creating change as well? Or will at least not be thwarting my efforts constantly as I'm trying to create changes, because the kids are paying attention.
Oh, yes.
You know? That's one of the places I see resentments forming so often in relationships, is with if one person is working really hard against all these systems and structures and norms and narratives and wanting to show the children something different. And meanwhile, dad is like just perpetuating some of these norms. Like, you know, she's running around like crazy, multitasking, doing all the things, and he's just sitting back, drinking his coffee, reading his book, as if there's nothing for him to do or he doesn't know what to do. That kind of thing is becoming less and less acceptable among mothers as we're waking up and saying, what? we need more equity in households.
Oh, yeah, this is so true. It can impose conflict, like I mentioned earlier, because it is not always easy process.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's very important, like I said, going forward. Is it someone you want to grow with? And Yeah, because that then reflects on children. I always like to reflect on like how I remember my childhood or how I remember my mother. And I would say that, yeah, most of the time I just remember her being in the kitchen. Obviously, that was in like 80s, but that's what I re remember. And I think as yeah, I sometimes try to kind of see that in me. I mean, I see in what ways I perhaps could maybe sabotage a little bit my kind of efforts in motherhood, because it's very easy for me to just get in the cleaning mode and stuff. And then I just realized that, oh, you actually don't have to do it. You are doing the same with your mother. You could spend time now, maybe with your child or whatever. But yeah, I think it's good to kind of pause and really reflect how we, as children of our parents, really remember that. Because that is good, I think. Would you agree? That's a good indication of where to go next, and all the kind of good mother myth, and what does that actually mean to us? And if someone is like thinking of maybe opening up that conversation, even internal conversations with themselves, what do you think is this single thing they could do to discover answers?
Well, I think so much of the work ultimately boils down to a sense of worthiness, because we have been conditioned to think that because we are not keeping up, quote unquote, because we are imperfect, that we are actually not worthy of whatever it is, breaks, rest, that we have to get it all just right and all has to be perfectly presentable in order to be worthy of a well-lit soul fire. And I think that we've got to throw that out, the sooner the better, because that will just mean we're cooking and cleaning and, tending to others at the expense of ourselves for the rest of our days, because we can't actually, it's a moving target that's constantly changing. What, as your kids grow, as trends, things are trending, as, your house needs repairs and whatever, it's never ending. The work is never ending. So if we can start to work on self-compassion, breaking down the narrative that, the reason that this is so hard is because I'm personally inadequate. Like, that, I think, is the first thing that needs to go, so that then we can say, no, this is it. The reason that this is so hard is because it's set up such that in a capitalist economy, care work is not seen as actual work, because then capitalism is propped up on that. And there's so much more potential for those who make money, and especially those who make a lot of money, can make even more money if all this whole sector, this whole, all the care work is not seen as real work. That's the reason that we all question, like, well, my husband goes to work, he makes the money, and I just stay home with the kids. We devalue our own work as if care work isn't important. But deep down, we know how important it is. It's so essential.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I see like twofold. One thing is, yeah, definitely challenging what we hear, see, and known from the outside, yes, conditioning and cultural narrative. But another thing is the narrative inside our head, more around, I think you also mentioned this in your book, I think, like Byron Katie, really well said, who are you with the thought you have? Who would you be without that thought? So even if we take, for example, cleaning, which I resonate with, because, but when I stop and just like think, well, what about changing that thought and belief to I can be happy and focused even if the house is not tidy? Because the internal belief would be that no, I can't focus, I can't work, can't do anything if it's tidy, like if it's not. Yeah, this is to be challenged, because I think the best, talking about that somatic aspect, the best indication really of whether that thought is suiting us or not is how it feels in the body. And very often it is that something drops. Something like that heavy load from our back, and if we feel lighter. I mean, I think trusting the messages from our bodies, which we have not been learned to practice and do, that's a big part, I think, of embracing, finding, and then embracing our truth. So there's big element to actually honoring body as much as we have been taught and learned to honor our mind. If I reflect now, like on my journey, my daughter is only 1.5 years old, but I feel that I already kind of step and appreciate and honor more of the feminine energy, more of that softness, more of messages from body, and I'm more open to really take it more seriously rather than just brush it off like before, because I am already in different energy. And I feel that without motherhood, I don't know if that shift would happen at all, but it's absolutely incredible journey and so many layers to that narrative, isn't it?
Yeah, and I absolutely agree that so much of this work is internal work. It's deconstructing the ways that we've been conditioned to think that we have to behave in order to be seen as good or to be productive or to be good mothers. Of course, we want to be good mothers, but we've really got to look at that, because it's a bit of a trap. If we aren't really looking at, like, wait, who is creating the story of what it looks like to be a good mother these days? And, you know, if it's constantly changing as well, and if it means that you have to purchase a lot of things, then there gives you a clue as to where these messages are coming from. You know, it's a profit, you know, it's a profit motivation by profit. And deconstructing the narratives and then using that felt sense to be able to get to our own personal truth. I think that is absolutely a so much of this work.
Yes, I agree. I think something very simple I did recently is just open on my iPhone the notes and just type good mother is a mother who. I just wrote everything that logically I think is BS, but something that is an automatic thought, so that I write it. Because it's so much, like you say, it's so much deeper, and it took 40 years to condition in me, but actually seeing it, I think when you have courage to maybe first see your thoughts, because that also could be for many women just like block, like they don't want to face certain things, but when you actually do it, simple writing literally what comes to your mind, then you can actually see what you really want to measure yourself, let's say, against, and what's yours, what's not. Try it on, see how you feel, like trying a coat, try your belief. If it's uncomfortable, too tight, change it. So I think it's very important. Another question I wanted to ask is more around being a change maker. What does it mean to you, or how would you define who change maker is in modern world?
Yeah, I think it can look like so many different things, but it's really someone who looks around and says, not this way. This isn't the way. This isn't the end. We haven't been liberated enough. We haven't, you know, like feminism isn't evolved all the way. You know, we haven't, this isn't the, these aren't the structures. These aren't the systems that will sustain us, that are feeding us, that are nourishing us deeply. This isn't the end. This isn't the epitome of humanity. And people who are seeing that and who really have a heart to do something about it, to do something, that I think that that's enough to qualify as a change maker.
What change? I think Gandhi said, like, be the change you wish or you want to see in the world. What change do you, Beth, want to see, wish to see in the world?
Oh, gosh. One of the things that I long to see in my lifetime, I hope I get to see, is a shift toward truly valuing care work, that unpaid care work, that paid, low paid care work, because most care work is either unpaid or low paid, that would change, that we would see some systems shifting so that there is a valuing of care as opposed to just productivity and producing. And that more and more mothers would see and feel their worth and their worthiness, and come together, be supporting one another, finding, knowing they're worthy of support, they're worthy of feeling good and vibrant and alive. Because I think that we need so much more of, we need more healthy femininity and more healthy masculinity. So I also hope to see, you know, in my lifetime, more men who are seeing these things, waking up to these realities and speaking up and doing the work and encouraging each other to do the work. So I'm, you know, one of the things that I attempt to do is to bring people together who want to be having these conversations. So
That
bringing
makes
more of
sense.
these women together, bringing more of these men together who are saying, not this way. There's another way, and we're here to help co-create that other way.
Oh, that's beautiful. What do you love the most about your work?
I would say getting to experience intimate conversations with women who are exactly doing this, who are waking up to their own worthiness and who are saying, wait, I've held this belief. I don't actually think it's true. And then you start to watch it fall away as they feel seen and appreciated by other women in the group. And that sense of intimacy that leads to a greater self-compassion and self-knowing is just invaluable. It's so
Oh,
beautiful for
that's
women's.
beautiful. I can definitely feel it. Final question is about TED Talk. If you are invited and you have one message to the world and 20 minutes, what that message would be about?
I think it would be around this idea that we need more people understanding that it isn't personal inadequacy that is making motherhood so hard. We're going to do anything. If it's going to change, we're going to have to shed perfectionism, that our guardedness. We need more community. We need to re-village. We need to get bold and brave in our connecting with each other because we're not meant to do any of this alone. We're not meant to be raising kids, single family households. And so under these structures, we've got to get radical in our connecting with each other and be brave about that and really shed the belief that there's something wrong with us and that's why it's so hard.
Thank you, Beth. That was wonderful, and I appreciate that conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Such a pleasure, really, to talk about this and hear your passion, see your passion. And I hope this will inspire many moms who listen to find them and find their way in how they can bring it to the world to shine.
Thank you
Can you
so much
tell
for
us,
having me.
just wonder if you can just share where our listeners can find you?
Yeah, so you can find me at revolutionfromhome.com, also Revolution from Home on Instagram and Facebook.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much and wishing you all the best on your change maker journey.
Thank you. I wish you all the best on yours as well.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me, Mama. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love for you to leave me a review and subscribe to be notified when the next episode drops. If you would like to connect with me, you can find me over at Instagram where my handle is at firestartamom. Looking forward to see you back here soon for the next chat. Bye for now.